Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery for Sharon Katz, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Rachel, Pesach Sev Ben Chava, Harab Meir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mittman, and Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba. We have two subjects we want to discuss on this week's program. The first is this week's parasha, Parashat HaShavua from the Torah, our Torah portion, which is Vayera. And in that Torah portion, we're going to discuss the Jewish view of how to achieve unlimited happiness. Is there a way to achieve unlimited happiness? Can we truly be happy in this world? And the second subject we want to discuss is how the anti-Israel Donald Trump has now pressured the Netanyahu regime to kill even the wimpy so-called Jerusalem bill. There was going to be a bill about Jerusalem, Israel's capital, very wimpy, pathetic little bill. And even that was too much for Donald Trump. And so they pressured Bibi, and Bibi, of course, immediately caved in. We're going to discuss that again to prove that Trump is anti-Israel. He's against Israel. He's an enemy of Israel, just as much as Barack Hussein Obama was. And that Bibi Netanyahu is worthless as a leader, a complete puppet of whoever sits in the White House. But first, let's talk about this week's parasha. Parashat Vayera. First of all, there's so many things to discuss in the parasha. I could literally do a program that's 10 hours long on the parasha. I could do a program that's 100 hours long on the parasha. We could do endless programs just on this week's parasha. It's such a great Torah portion, as all the Torah portions are. But we're going to discuss the concept of God testing us, of Hashem testing us. Because Hashem tests Avraham Avinu, Abraham our father, in this parasha. And we're taught that Avraham faced a total of 10 major tests from Hashem and passed all 10 of them. And in this week's parasha, we get the final test, which is Akedat Yitzchak. Akedat Yitzchak is the sacrifice of Yitzchak, his son, where God tells him to sacrifice his son. Now, first of all, I just want to discuss, before we discuss the concept of why would God test people? What's the point of testing people? What do we gain by testing people? After all, God already knows what the results of the test are going to be before he does it. He doesn't have to test. He already knows if somebody's going to pass or fail. He knows the future, the past, the present. He knows everything. So what's the point? We're going to discuss that in a moment. But first, I just want to discuss the concept of Akedat Yitzchak, of the sacrifice of Yitzchak, Avraham's son. What an incredible story that is. Avraham was preaching to the world that they must stop human sacrifices. This is one of the things that he preached. He went around, he became a preacher and told the world they have to believe only in one God, that the idols are nonsense, the idols of wood and stone, and even worshiping the sun and the moon and the stars, all of it is absurd. Or believing in more than one God is absurd. That you have to believe in just one God, an all-powerful God who can never change, who is indivisible, and this was what he was preaching. And he also preached a certain set of a code of morals and of God's laws. And one of them was that the universal practice of human sacrifice, which took place in those days, that this went against God's law, that this was an act of cruel murder, and that God did not approve of this. God did not want you to take your children and throw them in the fire to Molech, to the idol of those days. That this went against what God had intended. So he went around preaching this for years, became famous for and became known as the person who opposes human sacrifice. And all of a sudden, God comes to him and says, I want you to sacrifice Yitzchak. I want you to sacrifice your the one son whom I have promised that through Yitzchak, we're going to continue the Brit, we're going to continue the covenant and the legacy that will lead to a chosen people and a nation and a nation of priests and a holy nation that will eventually lead to the redemption of the world. So he's telling Abraham he has to go against everything he was preaching all these years and sacrifice his son. And that he has to basically kill the one chance that he had to have a continuation of his legacy through he and his wife Sarah, so that Yitzchak could continue, and then after Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yitzchak is Isaac and Yaakov is Jacob, that they could continue the legacy and continue until we have the creation of the nation of Israel. God was basically saying, I want you to sacrifice all this. I've decided I want you to make Yitzchak a human sacrifice. What an incredible test. I mean, and this was test number 10 for Abraham. He went through 9 very difficult tests before this, passed all of them, but this was the 10th, final, and most difficult test of all. And by the way, remember, Abraham has Yitzchak in a miraculous way when he's already 99 years old, and when Yitzchak is conceived, he's already 99 years old, and his wife is 89 years old. And so he's 100 years old when Yitzchak is born, and Sarah is 90 years old. So this great miraculous birth takes place. This is a new beginning, a great new beginning, and Abraham has hope for the future now. And all this hope now is just going to be taken away, and Abraham now has to sacrifice him. Abraham does not even question God and say, what do you mean? Well, you told me that we can't have sacrifices, and I've been telling everybody we can't have sacrifices, and how can you tell me to slaughter my own son, whom I love so much? How could you tell me this? He doesn't question it. He immediately prepares for the sacrifice and gets ready to obey God's commandment. Now, how could that be possible? It's possible only if you understand the Jewish concept of the world that we live in. This world, ha'olam hazeh, this is the material world. This is the finite, limited world. But there's a world beyond this world, a spiritual world beyond this world, an unlimited world. And if we do what Hashem, what God tells us to do, death in this world is not death of the soul. The soul lives forever. And if we want true pleasure and true happiness and true joy and true fulfillment for the soul, we have to do whatever Hashem tells us to do. And so Abraham understood that, and so he was willing to do this, even though this was undoubtedly the most painful, the most difficult sacrifice anybody could ever be asked to make. But he showed complete loyalty to Hashem and to his commandments, something which for us, I mean, this would be like a virtually impossible thing for almost all of us to do. I mean, how could we even think about doing something like this to our own son or our own child? But Abraham was on such a high spiritual level that he understood that you have to do whatever Hashem commands you to do. And that this world is just a temporary place that we're in. It's a testing ground for something much greater and much better that awaits us. Anyway, I can go into far greater detail about this, but I want to move on to the concept of God testing us in general. Of course, Abraham passes the test, and then the angel comes to Abraham and says to him, no, don't touch the boy, don't sacrifice him, don't touch him. And Abraham, in the end, does not sacrifice him, but he tested him. And God says, because you passed this test, now I've seen, you know, now this is it. Now we have a covenant, and all nations will be blessed through you, and those who curse you will be cursed forever. You know, that this is a Brit Olam, this is an eternal covenant. And God gives Abraham the ultimate blessing and the ultimate eternal promises as a result of him passing this test. For Abraham and for all of his descendants and all of his seed forever and ever because of his passing this test. Now, why does Hashem test us? Why do we live in a world where we're tested? Everything we do is a test. Everything we do is a challenge between Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, and Yetzer HaTov, the good inclination. Why is everything a test? Why go through this? After all, Hashem already knows what the results of the test are going to be. It's one thing if you test somebody because you want to see what they're going to do. Hashem doesn't have to test to see what somebody's going to do. He already knows what they're going to do. He already knows what the results of the test are going to be in advance. Hashem knows the future as well as he knows the past. He knows everything. So what's the point of the test? Well, first of all, the test is for us and the world. It shows us and the world what we are capable of doing. It shows the type of strength that we have or the type of weakness we have if we fail the test. So it's important for us and the world to see the results of the test. It's one thing to say, I believe somebody would pay. Oh, he would stand firm if he... It's one thing to say that in a theoretical sense. And it's another thing to prove it. For us and for the world, we need proof. We need to have actual deeds, proof and evidence that we can actually pass a test or fail a test. So one of the reasons for the test is for us to see and for the world to see whether or not we can pass or fail. Because if we pass, it encourages us to go on and to pass other tests and strengthens us. And it also encourages others who see the bravery of Avraham and his devotion to Hashem. And eventually how Avraham's descendants, how his children, the Jewish people, were willing to be burned at the stake during the Spanish Inquisition and refused to convert to Catholicism. The Catholic Church ordered Jews who refused to become Catholics to be burned alive at the stake, men, women, and children. And Jews, they could have faked it. They could have said, well, yeah, we'll be Catholics. And some Jews did. They could have faked it and secretly continued to be Jews. And there were Jews who did that. But there were Jews who refused to do that, refused to fake it, who insisted upon saying, no, I believe in one God and I'm willing to die for what I believe in, which is the true Jewish way. And thousands of Jews were burned alive, going to the stake for their beliefs. And throughout history, millions of Jews lost their lives because of what they believed in and because of what they stood for and because of what they represented. So this is part of being a light unto the nations. It's very difficult and it's very painful, and we didn't have to go through all this. If we had been righteous from the start and had done what Hashem commanded us to do, we could have avoided all this. But unfortunately, we go through the long process with the tests and with all the difficulties and with all the pain and sacrifice and torture and all the other things we went through because we refused to do what Hashem commanded us to do. In any event, the test strengthens us and encourages us, and we become different people as a result of the test. Aside from encouraging us and inspiring many others, aside from that, we become different people when we're tested. The Avraham, before he had these 10 tests, and the Avraham after the 10 tests are two different Avrahams. The Avraham after the 10 tests is a much stronger, more faithful leader and spiritual leader and spiritual head for the Jewish people. Much stronger. People who go through tests become different people. Much stronger people, much better people, much more moral people after having passed the test. We change for the better. And others change for the better when they see that we're able to pass the test, when they see that we're able to achieve great new heights, when they see that we're able to do things that seem impossible. There are many times in life when we face things that seem impossible, and even afterwards we think, how did I ever get through that? How did I ever do that? We see what strength we're capable of and what we can do. We see what we can do and we see what we can be. And it's important for us and it's important for others to see that. It's part of why this life in this world is so significant and why this life in this world is where the decision-making process takes place as to what our role will be in the next world. Now, that's just a brief, very brief, not even scratching the beginning of the surface of the Jewish philosophy, the Torah philosophy on testing and on nisyonot, in Hebrew, nisyonot, tests in this world. I haven't even begun to cover all of the endless rabbinic territory and Talmudic territory that we could cover on this. It was very, very brief. But there's just another concept that I think we should understand when we understand things like this week's Torah portion. We have to understand that God is infinite. God's unlimited. And we are limited. So we can't really truly comprehend God. But God has created two elements in a human being. One is his body, and the other is his soul. Only human beings have a soul. Animals do not have a soul. Animals are wonderful. We love God's animals. We love the creatures God has created, but they don't have a soul. They don't have the ability to decide between good and evil and go against their instincts. They don't have that ability. They don't have the ability to say, why am I in this world? Do I have a creator? Is there a world beyond this? They don't have the ability to think those types of thoughts. They only live for the moment and for their instincts. The body, the human body, can only experience limited happiness and joy and fulfillment. The soul, on the other hand, has no limitations in terms of the happiness and the joy that it can experience. The soul, the spiritual part of us. That's why our dreams can be unlimited dreams. People can never truly be completely happy in this world because this is a world of limitations. A physical world is a world of limitations. The physical world as it stands now. Hashem may change that in the world to come. He may change the physical aspects of this world and make them eternal. But a physical world as it is now, the elements of the world that Hashem has created right now are physical and have physical limitations. You can never truly have complete happiness in this world because you know that even if you're happy with something you're doing, you know it's coming to an end. You know you're going to get older. And who knows that better than me? I'm 61 years old already. It was just yesterday when I was a kid, when I was a teenager in the Jewish Defense League fighting to free Soviet Jews. Now I'm 61 years old. Now I'm an old man. You get older. People get sick. People die. It's limited. It's coming to an end. Everything you do in this world is coming to an end. It's like you go on a vacation. If you go on a one-week vacation, you never really completely could enjoy the vacation because you know at the end of that vacation, at the end of the week, you got to go back and it's all over. And that's true for everything in this world, everything we do. If you eat something that you really like, let's talk about food, right? That's one of the great joys, one of the great physical joys we have in this world, which we share with the animal world. The animals also eat and also enjoy eating. When do you enjoy eating? You enjoy eating when you're hungry. And so God deliberately creates a situation where you'll be hungry. And then when you're eating, you're fulfilled. As you're eating, you feel fulfilled. You enjoy, you savor the meal if it's something that you like and if you're hungry. When you're full, even if it's something you loved eating, the pleasure is over. When you're full, if somebody wants to give you more of something that you love and you're completely full and you can't eat anything else, you just can't. In fact, it would be torture for you to try to eat something that you love to eat when you're really full. Because we're limited. Our physical pleasures and physical attributes are limited in this world. But our thoughts and our dreams and our aspirations and our desires and the spiritual part of us is unlimited. There's no limit to what we can dream of. That's why people who become billionaires are not satisfied. They want more billions. That's why people are never have enough. Because God created us and programmed us in a way where we aspire to unlimited happiness. We aspire to unlimited aspirations and dreams. Why? Because God, to those who are righteous, intends to give unlimited happiness. The God without limitations wants to put us in a world without limitations, ha'olam haba, the world to come, where there will be no limitations and we will have happiness beyond anything we can imagine. Just being in the presence of God will be such a joy, and we can't understand this now because we're in this physical world and in this body and we're limited and we can't understand it. It's like describing to a blind person what different colors are. If someone was born blind and never saw any colors, you can't describe the difference between blue and black and green. They won't understand it. No matter what you do to describe it, they won't understand it. But in the next world, The rabbis teach us that being in the presence of God for one moment brings such joy to the soul, will bring such joy to the soul, such a thrill to the soul to be in the presence of God for just one moment, that people would be willing to cut their fingers and toes off just to be in the presence of God for one moment. Now you can imagine what type of happiness that must be. And we're talking about a world of eternal, where this is eternal, where people live forever. So God is unlimited, and He wants to give us unlimited happiness and unlimited joy and satisfaction and fulfillment. He wants to do this for us. He wants to share that with us. By the way, what is the greatest unlimited joy that we could get? What would give us the greatest possible unlimited joy? What is the greatest unlimited the greatest unlimited factor in the world? God Himself. Now, our souls desire this unlimited happiness, but we can't achieve it in this world. We can't achieve it in the next world. But if we understand and we learn and we commit ourselves to understanding God's laws and God's ways as He gave them to the Jewish people in Har Sinai, in Mount Sinai, and follow His commandments, that's our roadmap. That's our roadmap to the next world, where it says one moment in the next world will be better and more fulfilling than all the joy and happiness in this world put together from the beginning of time to the end of time. Just one moment in the next world will be worth more than that. We need also to remember something else. When we're talking about testing, remember we were speaking about if you're full and somebody tries to give you even something that you love, something you love to eat, and you're full, you don't want to eat any more of that. You would be torture, in fact. People would actually be under torture to even eat something that they love to eat if they're completely full, if they just can't look at any more food. The joy we get is when we are fulfilling something that's empty. In other words, we're in this world with what we call chesronot, what we call needs. We have needs that have to be fulfilled, corrections that have to be made in the world, needs that have to be fulfilled. That's what we're in this world for. And what is unhappiness caused by? Unhappiness is caused when you don't have all of your needs fulfilled, when there's something that you're lacking. Every time you're lacking something, that causes unhappiness. By the way, that's one of the reasons why God has to be good, because God isn't lacking anything. People are only bad if they're lacking something. When someone lacks something, that's why they steal, because they want something. That's why they murder, because of jealousy or ego or anger or other aspects of lacking. Of course, that's no excuse, and all of that is also part of a test, but the reason for evil behavior, the reason for bad behavior, is because of lacking. In the next world, there's no lacking. There's only giving. There's no taking. Everybody wants to give, or people take in order to give. In other words, they take what is needed to survive and what is needed to continue to exist in order to give to others. But they live for others in the next world. Everybody lives for everybody else. Everybody lives for everybody. You can leave the house without locking your door. You can go to the supermarket without your credit card or cash. Everybody gives to everybody. It's a world of complete honesty. Everybody loves each other. That will be true paradise. And can you imagine a world like that where there's no illness and no starvation and no diseases and no death, no aging? Imagine a world like that. And where our teacher and our king and our true ruler is Hashem Himself, is God Himself. That's the world to come. In any event, when you're fulfilling that lacking, something that you're lacking, that's when you're happy. Even Jews in the concentration camps, in the Nazi death camps during the Holocaust, when they were starving to death, if they had a little piece of bread, that they knew would not be enough to fill them up. But while they were eating that one little piece of rotten bread that they had, even if it was rotten and spoiled and molded, but they were desperately starving, while they're eating that one piece of bread, they were happy. They would have the happiness of at least eating that one piece of bread or that one potato. Of course, once they finished it, they'd become unhappy again. But when you're fulfilling something that is lacking or empty, that's when you have happiness. Once you achieve the goal, once you've reached that goal, that's when it ends. That's when it's over. That's when the happiness is over. You could think back nostalgically of how great it was when you were doing that, but it's not the same. And so part of our testing in this world, part of our testing is how do we fulfill our lack, the things that we lack in this world. Do we fulfill them with nonsense? Do we fulfill them with things that are temporary, that are preposterous, that are ridiculous? Or do we fulfill them with things that are truly meaningful? That's one of the great tests in life. I can go on and on, but because of time, I have to end it here. But this is a great parasha, and there's so many things in the parasha. I wanted to talk to you about the three angels. I've spoken to you before about the three angels that come to Avraham. Harambam, Maimonides, says that was all in a prophetic dream. I wanted to speak to you about a lot of things in this parasha, but unfortunately, time doesn't permit. The second subject we want to discuss on the program this week is Donald Trump again pressuring Israel. Every single time Israel tries to do the slightest thing, Donald Trump moves in and pressures Israel the same way that Barack Hussein Obama, the Muslim Jew hater, did. There is no difference between Obama's anti-Israel policies and Trump's anti-Israel policies. Both of them are enemies of Israel. There is no difference whatsoever, except Trump is worse, because Trump neutralizes right-wing opposition, at least on the right. When Obama used to do this, there was resistance in Israel. There were people who resisted and said, "Ah, that anti-Semite Obama." You know, Obama was very unpopular in Israel, and on the right, they hated him. When Trump is president, it's a whole different ballgame. When Trump is president, they think, "Oh, well," they make excuses, and you know, and it neutralizes opposition on the right. So our situation is even worse when you have the phony right, as opposed to when you have the open left in power. There was a bill that they wanted to sponsor in Israel, a wimpy, pathetic little bill on Jerusalem, to add places like Maale Adumim, which is a community with tens of thousands of Jews, to Jerusalem, so that Jerusalem will have more Jewish residents. And the bill was not really something that would have a significant effect on anything, because knowing the pathetic leaders in Israel, how easily they give in, they could easily undo any bill that they pass. So it wasn't something. Trump has already gotten Bibi to continue the building freeze, which is the worst thing for Israel, which is absolute suicidal madness for Israel. Israel is freezing Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. Trump has continued the Obama policy of pressuring Bibi to freeze all Jewish building. So in that respect, just as bad as Obama in every way. But one thing, they wanted to pass a bill to add certain towns in Judea and Samaria to Jerusalem, to the Jerusalem municipality, to make it harder to surrender Jerusalem, supposedly. And it's a very minor, wimpy bill that I don't think would have any tremendous effect. But even this wimpy, pathetic little bill, even this was too much for Donald Trump, the enemy of Israel. And even on this pathetic, wimpy little thing, Bibi Netanyahu, who is such a coward and such a wimp and such a galut-minded piece of garbage, even on this wimpy, pathetic little thing, he didn't stand firm. Even on this, he immediately caves in. The minute Trump tells him something, he immediately folds like a cheap fan. This is just another example, and we've given you so many dozens of examples of Trump's anti-Israel policies, all the anti-Israel things he's doing. If he's not willing to let Israel pass a wimpy, pathetic little bill like this on Jerusalem, if he's against Israel on the issue of Jerusalem, how can you get more anti-Israel than that? That is as anti-Israel as you can get. the sick, demented, sick animal, self-hating Jews who continue to worship Trump, who is against Israel even on Jerusalem. I mean, this is the sickest thing you could possibly imagine, that people continue to say, oh, he's our friend, he's good for Israel. What are you, insane? Even on Jerusalem, he won't give Israel an inch. He wants Israel to give up everything because he wants a deal, the art of the deal. He doesn't know how to make any deals. He's failing on everything. Everything he's doing is a disaster and a failure. And remember, we told you from the start that his presidency would be a disastrous failure, and it will be. His latest budget that they just passed a budget with money for Planned Parenthood, with money for abortions, with money for gay rights, with money for every left-wing cause under the sun, in the budget that the taxpayers are funding, with money for so-called educational institutions that are all left-wing, politically correct cesspools, with money for everything under the sun that Trump promised he was going to eliminate. They got money for everything, but they don't have money for a wall. They don't have money for the wall on the southern border, which Trump promised on day one they were going to start building. Over 9 months later, no building, not one penny for any wall. I mean, it's such a laughable farce. We're going to have the so-called tax reform bill, where the middle class is going to pay higher taxes, and the super rich are going to get a giant tax break. Trump's billionaire friends are going to get a giant tax break, and most middle income people are going to see a tax increase. Really, really pathetic. Really, really pathetic. And people are not going to learn, and they're not going to understand what a farce this is until it's too late, until the United States is finished, is kaput. Because Trump is really, he really is finishing off the United States. It would be one thing if you had a left-wing Democrat doing this. Then at least the American people, when things really get bad, could say, hey, this is terrible. You know, we got to have a real change. That would be one thing. But when you got a Republican who is continuing these policies, saying, well, you have to stop illegal aliens, and then more illegal aliens coming in than before. We have to build a wall. Not one penny for any wall. No wall is being built. The rhetoric on issue after issue, and nothing ever happens. This is the same thing with Netanyahu in Israel. We've been going through this with Netanyahu in Israel for over 20 years now. This is the most destructive type of leadership you could have, where he lulls people to sleep and pretends that he stands for something, and in the end, the opposite winds up happening. We're trying to wake people up. We have an advertising campaign to reach the Jews of Israel with the truth, with our Hebrew videos, and we are reaching Jews with the truth with our advertising campaign. Tens of thousands of Jews see our Hebrew videos. If you agree that it's important that we reach Jews with the truth, if you agree that it's important that someone stand up for what's right in Israel, then join us, fight with us, help us, let's fight together as a team. If we fight together as a team, we can still make this a better world. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.